Okay, this is Diana Brand. I'm at Horsey Manor and I'm interviewing Christine Corkett, for part of the Telling Tales project. And it's the 9th of December 2014. So we're going to start by asking you, Christine, how you got involved in folk music to begin with.
Well, that's an interesting one. I suppose I first came across folk dance through my mother going to a class when I was very young, sort of 7, 8. And occasionally she needed to take me along. So that was, 60 years ago. And from that I enjoyed going with her, but you know, it didn't feature regularly in my life at that stage. And then when I was probably 16-ish, I used to go off to these weekends with the Ranger Guides and the Rover Scouts, and always on Saturday night we had a barn dance, and I enjoyed that. And when I went off to London, I looked for some folk activity to go to. And I found, within walking distance of where I was living, that there was a folk club at Imperial College in London. And I used to go along to that. And so I suppose that got me sort of enjoying it, but very much just something I did once a week. And I think probably the biggest thing that had an influence on me was that I was looking for a holiday job around about 1964, and on the college notice board there was they were advertising for somebody to come to a camp to do the catering, and this was in Devon, and I thought, well, that sounds good. They weren't paying very much at all, but I thought, well, you know, if they paid my train journey down, you know, that would be fine. So I was reading it, and another friend of mine was also reading it, and she said, I wonder if they'd have two of us and we'd split the money. So for the princely sum of £1.50 a week, we went off to Devon to do 4 months of catering, 4 weeks of catering. And it was being organised by a fairly sort of new organisation, which Bill Rutter had also started, the person who was very much involved with the starting of Horsey Manor Society. And we sort of supervised the catering for a month. But what the sort of side effect of all of this was that we met some really interesting people who were not only dancers, but musicians and singers. And I learned an awful lot about the English Folk Dance and Song Society and what they did, and all sorts of things about the folk traditions of this country, which I didn't know before. I mean, I'd never met anyone who clogged dance until then, and I hadn't come across certain instruments until that summer. So that really sort of galvanised me into having a lifelong interest in folk after that.
And how old were you then?
I was 19.
And you were studying at Imperial College?
No, I was dancing at Imperial College. I was studying at Battersea College of Education at the time. Yeah.
And what was the name of the organisation in Devon? Can you remember?
It was Folk Camp Society, and they still exist, and they have been organising camping holidays, well, ever since.
So how did you actually then get involved with Horsey?
Horsey came a little bit later. I was dancing regularly at about 3 clubs in Surrey. By then I was teaching. And one of the people that I met regularly at 2 of the clubs said to me, you really ought to go to Horsey Manor. It's a great place. And she said this for more than 1 year, because I was thinking, that's a long way to drive from Surrey down to Somerset on a Friday night after you've been at work. Do I want to do this, you know? Anyway, eventually I came down to a weekend that the Yetis were doing, and I also came down with one of the dance clubs I went to. So that really started me off.
And what was your impression of Halsey as you came up the drive?
It was dark at that point, so because it was winter, and it was January, I believe, and we had snow that weekend. So I think the impression was probably one of warmth rather than what we could actually see, because we didn't go out walking or anything. We just, you know, we were indoors most of the weekend. There are things that stick in my mind from that weekend, not particularly to do with what I'd come for. the food I remember, that was all very sort of wholesome and pleasant. We helped in those days with washing up and wiping up. I remember being in a room, it was room 3, which actually in those days had 7 beds. It has 3 or 4 these days, but then it was much more like a sort of youth hostel regime, and you didn't have a great deal of space between beds. And I do remember that. And I remember the weather, because we, having snowed all day Saturday, and quite a lot of snow, on the Sunday it thawed incredibly quickly and there were floods. So getting back to Surrey became quite a problem. I mean, it was before the days of the motorways, of course, and we set out and we knew we couldn't go back into Taunton because there were floods on that road. So one of the people that was with me said, oh, we'll go down into the valley and see if we can loop round beyond the flood. Anyway, we found another flood. Having studied geography, I should have known going down was not a good idea. but you know, it was dark, and we set off thinking, well, we've got a long journey. After a couple of false starts, this friend said to me, well, we'll have to go over the top then. And I had no idea what this meant, but it actually meant going up Crocombe Hill and over the Quantocks down into Bridgewater. Well, Crocombe Hill was a bit like a river, and we got over to Bridgewater, and that was about as far as we got in the first hour of the journey. And we debated then whether we should go on up towards Bristol or whether we should go out to Langport. And anyway, I think we headed for Frome and Warminster, and eventually we got back to Surrey sometime after midnight. So those were much stronger memories of that occasion than what actually happened that we'd come for, I'm afraid.
But you saw the Yetis, did you?
We saw the Yetis, and we had great fun, actually. And I do remember, you know, there was dancing on the Saturday night, and I remember they'd got a chap called Oscar Burridge who'd come to fill in some of the time when they weren't playing and dancing. And he did a really interesting talk on early recording equipment, and he had sort of horns and trumpety type things which were used not only on the to play the music, but also for recording it as well on these early sort of wax cylinder type things. And I do remember that made quite an impression on me.
So that was the first of many visits down.
That was the first of, too many to recall, really. I think I came 3 times in the early 70s and then had children. And we came once with the children as babies. And then after that, there was quite a gap. And we came back when they were teenagers. In between, we had gone to these folk camps that I was telling you about just now. And then we came back in the late 80s, early 90s, for several holidays with the children, and then we moved down to Somerset in 98, and since then I've had some different roles at Halsey. I wear several hats at the moment.
Well, let's stop there about the hats. Can I just ask you, did you meet any of the very early... Did you meet the woman who owned this place, the artist?
No, I didn't meet the artist. I met Marjorie and Donald, who were the first wardens here, and I knew some of the people who had put up money to buy it with the debenture scheme that they did back then. Yes, that all seems quite a long time ago. Marjorie and Donald were interesting people. They gathered around them quite a lot of students who came here and spent time in the summer, because when the manor was first owned by Halsey Manor Society, they didn't run as many courses as they do now. They ran weekend courses, but in between there was very little folky thing. Clark's Shoes used to use it a lot for training purposes. And then, I can't remember when it was, possibly in the 80s, they stopped doing a lot of their training courses, the sort of week-long ones. So at that point, Halsey started doing a few more courses, and that's grown and grown and grown. But back in the early days, it was really weekend events and the month of August.
Okay. So you moved back with your family. You moved to Somerset?
Moved back without the family. They'd flown the nest then. So there was just my husband and I, and we came back. And we knew Halsey Manor was here, so we knew that we'd come and dance here. We didn't quite know what else we might do at that stage.
What date was this?
This was 98. So what are we, 16, 17 years ago?
Mm-hmm. So tell us about your involvement in Halsey since 98.
Well, I suppose the first thing that I got involved with was serving in the shop, which was on a sort of monthly rota. So the whichever week of the month it was, we did that each month, we being my husband and I. And then round about 2002, the person who organised the shop at that stage was going through a stage of having, you know, hip replacements and so on, and she decided that she would still serve in the shop, but she wasn't going to do the organising. So I've been organising the shop from then on, which basically means dealing with the money, ordering things that we order, and doing a rota for people to come and serve. Since then, I have taken on other roles. My husband became a trustee round about that time, 2000. So he was busy doing that, and he did the magazine that Halsey had at the time. We still came here and danced, and we came here for some events during the year. And then round about 2008-ish, I was aware that people were commenting, because we had quite a lot of weddings here at the time, and people would come in and they would comment, you know, where's so-and-so gone? What's happened to this or that? And it's usually been moved because there was a wedding. And then you'd get the wedding people come in and they say, well, who owns this place? Is it National Trust? You know, those sort of questions, and not having a clue what the use of the manor was. So I thought, we need something. So that was when I started pondering about the wall hanging that's in the entrance hall. And I think it was about a year that I was pondering. And thinking, well, what can we put up there? And it's going to have to be quite big to cover that wall. Anyway, by the end of a year, I thought, right, I'm ready to do something about this. So I asked the council at the time for permission to make a hanging. And I also asked the Friends of Horsey Manor if they would finance it. So those two being settled, I then went to various people who, you know, come here on courses, because by then I'd got to know quite a lot of people who come here, and I asked them if they would do a panel. And I really needed 20 people, because there were 20 panels. So I think I got to 19, and then we had one or two problems, like somebody had a stroke and couldn't sew anymore, and somebody else was ill, and, you know, as you do with these group things. But we got together at the beginning, well, it was October, it must have been 09, and had a 24-hour session here where we agreed certain things about the hanging, so that it would look not a mishmash of bits, but something that, you know, was hanging together nicely. So I did most of the initial drawings, which were only an outline, but the right size, so that people had something to go on. And we set a target of finish it in 4 months from when we started on that weekend.
Could you describe it for the tape?
Right, the hanging is in fact three hangings, hanging in the east wall of the entrance hall. The middle hanging, because of the shape of the barrel ceiling, is taller than the two side hangings. The central hanging is between 10.5 and 11 feet high, and the other two are about 7.5 feet high. So the whole of that wall really is covered, with some wall showing, is covered in hangings, which have all of the English dance traditions and some traditions, ritual traditions. So we've got Morris dancing and rapper, clog dancing, one or two sort of special dances like the Bake Up and Abbots Bromley, which are unique within England, and so on. And then we've got one or two sort of rituals like the Padstow and the Minehead Hobby Horse, wassailing, and so on.
Is it embroidered, or is it?
It's actually machine appliqué, because when I was designing it, I felt that it had to be a method that everybody could do, and it would have a certain similarity without the, you know, the whole panel. So it's machine appliqué. Everyone taking part was allowed to choose their colours. The background was the same throughout, and some things needed a particular colour, like the Abbots Bromley were the Morris men were in their traditional dress. But some things, like the garland dancers, for instance, just had a typical costume of garland dance, but it wasn't of a particular team.
So you had a group of people. How many were in the group, don't you?
I think in the end there were 19 people involved.
And did they work at home, or did you...
They worked at home. We set up a Facebook site, a secret one that only we could look at. And anything that they wanted to ask the group, for instance, how are you doing the bells on the legs of the Morris dancer, or whatever, or how are you doing the flowers on the hat, you could ask, and you'd get comments from several people, about how they might be doing it or what they think about it. And that worked very well. And I encouraged people to take photos of how far they'd got and put those up every so often. So it either encouraged people that, you know, had not got that far to go a little bit further. So we had quite a lot of conversations on Facebook during that time. And the majority of people who took part did actually join the Facebook site. Some people didn't want to, but mainly those were people that live local to here, and I saw them quite often anyway. So we had 4 months to do the panel, and then all the panels arrived back, and five of us over the next 4 months put it together. It took probably longer to put together than it did to do the each individual panel. And as you added panel to panel, it got bigger and bigger as well. So, you know, it got to a point where really you needed a second person at the sewing machine just to move the fabric on, to take the weight, really. So it was an interesting thing to do.
Fantastic. And did it work? Did it give information to the wedding parties?
Well, we've stopped doing quite so many weddings, so I don't know about that. But for the people who come here, I think it, you know, it's been appreciated.
It's a focal point, isn't it?
Yes, it's a focal point. And some people say, well, I'm not sure what that is. You know, what's that traditional? Where's that from? One of the ones that people keep asking about is the well dressing, because outside of Derbyshire area, well dressings aren't seen very widely, and it's a rather static panel, and people look at it and they're not quite sure what they're looking at. So that's had quite a lot of comment.
Mm-hmm. So this is a massive project that you did. What are you doing now?
What am I doing now? Well, I'm doing the housekeeping, I think, is probably the way to describe it, for the Telling Tales project, the oral history project. And I shall be collecting in all the permissions and the copyrights and those sort of things.
And do you still dance?
I do when I can. Yes, I do still dance, yes. But I've had a few problems health-wise and I haven't danced as much as I would like. But I shall get back to it.
Now I'm going to ask you some funny questions about ghosts. Are there any ghosts? Have you seen any ghosts?
Well, I haven't seen any. So people tell me, I think, is the answer to that one. There's a group of people who, I think they're called the Paranormal Society, who have come here several times and, you know, they've stayed up all night and measured things with their bits of equipment, and they certainly say that there's activity in certain rooms, but I've slept in a lot of rooms here and I've not been aware of anything. I think they're sort of friendly.
There are no rooms you wouldn't sleep in then?
No, I don't think there is. I think I might be more wary of one or two rooms, but on the whole, I have slept in the one that I might now be wary of. But
okay. What about characters like people, not ghosty ones, but real people?
No.
What? Who can you remember? Who really
characters? Oh, well, Bill Rutter, who started this, was a great character, sort of larger than life, and very determined. Some people would almost say a bit of a bully, but he had good ideas and would make sure they got carried out. And he had a good knack of surrounding himself by people who would do things. And consequently, the manor is here. And, you know, it's survived 50 years. Let's hope it survives another 50.
And what about occasions, which, whether it, perhaps a disaster? Can you remember any disastrous occasions?
I can remember being snowed in here only 2 years ago, which was... The event was called a winter warmer, and it was at the end of January. And we arrived... I think we'd had snow on the Friday before the Sunday that we arrived, and that had been cleared by one of the local farmers, because the lane doesn't get cleared by anyone except whoever we decide will do it. And we all arrived here safely, but on the Tuesday night it started snowing, and it was round about 6 o'clock at night when the lady who manned the bar arrived, and she said, "Well, it's not snowing at Willerton, but it's snowing quite fast up here." So she was here for the night, but she phoned her husband round about 9 o'clock, and he said, "No, we haven't got any snow down in Willerton. It's only, what, 4 miles away?" But here we were still having snow, and we'd had a lot of snow, such that the staff who were on duty for the evening meal couldn't go home, and it carried on snowing and snowing. And then the next day, well, we'd had about 10, 12 inches overnight. So all that had been cleared the previous Sunday was needing to be cleared again. Well, the next day, I think it was, the farmer came back and cleared the lane again and cleared the car park out the front. But, of course, with the tractor, he couldn't get between cars. So on the Thursday morning when we were all leaving, the chef, the chief officer, the housekeeper, whilst we were having a lovely breakfast indoors, they were out there shovelling snow so that we could open our car doors to actually get in our cars, because the snow was above the car door sill. And so that was interesting. We fortunately, I think we had one power cut. It must have been on the Wednesday morning, and we couldn't have coffee. We had to have apple juice.
That's not exactly a
no. And I think lunch was a bit odd. I can't remember what it was now, but it was a bit odd because the electricity came on just before lunch. So, you know, they hadn't been able to do whatever it was they were intending to do, and we had to have what they could do, you know. So that was a bit of a disaster. But, of course, we carried on dancing and singing and doing all those sort of things that we were here to do. And really, the outside world, you know, left us by. And it was interesting. When I got home, I had an email from my daughter, who lives in Sussex, saying, "Did you see the news last night?" And I said, "No." And she said, "Oh, the news people were at Netherstowey because both the A358 and the 39 were closed because of this snow. And they'd had to rescue, I think it's about 50 people from the A39 and put them in the village hall at Netherstowey for the night."
So if you'd been at home, it would have been a worse situation.
I mean, we'd had a lot of snow and a lot of tree damage. It was tree damage, really, on the 39, because the snow was so heavy. It's what they now call a snow bomb. A lot of snow in a very short time. And it brought down a lot of trees and split a lot of, you know, branches off trees, because the weight of the snow was just too much.
Well, it looks like we may be having another one.
Well, yes, when I heard the news this morning, I thought, oh, no.
Okay, so Christine, you've had, what, 50 years contact with this place?
Not quite.
How long?
Well, I first came here. I knew of its existence, probably from inception, but I first came here in 1970.
So we're talking about 44 years.
Yes. But not continuously, you see. There was quite a big gap.
Well, this is quite useful because with this big gap, can you compare what Halsey is like now with your first contact with Halsey?
Well, certainly physically there was a big difference. The bedrooms had as many beds as they would hold because it was before the Mews was owned by the society. So in order to get enough people here to make it viable, you know, as many beds were in every room. Now there are ensuite rooms and we own the Mews, so there's a big physical difference there. The first few years that I came here, there was no bar in the lounge. So the lounge actually was a bigger room, which is quite nice, but, you know, there's nowhere else to put the bar, really, at the moment. And it was thought that... I think a lot of people would walk down to Crowcombe to the pub, and it was thought that it would be better to have the bar here. So a little bit of that room was lost, you know, for our use. And if you've got 40 people here or 50 people here, the bar really as a lounge isn't big enough. What else is different?
What about age? Do you find people are older now than or do you get
certainly there were a lot of young people on the events that I came to in those early days. I think some events, the people coming have just got older and older and older. Since the last 4 years, since we've been having more events organised by the Manor, and the breadth of those events has grown, that there are more younger people coming. When I say younger, there are specific events that are organised for teenagers, that sort of age. And there are events where perhaps you don't get anyone under 60. So it's quite varied, the number of people coming and, you know, what they come for. I think probably the music events have got the broadest age range, because if you want to play a ukulele or a hurdy-gurdy, it's not age related, whereas some of the styles of dance might be more age related. Singing varies quite a lot in the age that come. Yeah, so that I think it probably back in the, you know, 50 years ago, to some extent was a younger lot of people, but it was relatively inexpensive to come here then. And of course, as you improve the facilities, so prices go up, and that in those days there were people who would come here just for the pleasure of coming here and not charge a fee. We now use more people whose livelihood it is. So you've got, you know, increased expenses.
And I'm going to ask you the last question now, I think.
Right.
If you want to add anything afterwards, it'd be fine. But do you remember going to any of the open days that were held here?
Not in the early days, when they were quite big events, I understand. In fact, really, I think only since we've lived in Somerset have I been to open days. And quite often it's because we've had the shop up and running and, you know, I've been here to look after that. Yeah, so they've become a little bit smaller, I think, in some ways, but also we now seem to hire out space to somebody who makes craft things or whatever, rather than doing many stalls ourselves. I think even going back, the first one I remember doing, we had skittles and things which the Friends of Horsey Manor organised. That as a body doesn't exist anymore. So I think there were many more stallholders that were volunteers from people living locally who came and did something. But now we've got, you know, the chap who runs a nursery down the road, he comes up with plants. So we don't have a plant stall where people are giving things. Somebody who makes jam on a sort of small but commercial basis comes with jams and marmalades and chutneys, and we sell them the space.
It just reflects what's happening in society,
yes,
really, doesn't it?
Yes. I think volunteering or committing yourselves to things is not so common these days, in a way.
Good. Is there anything, any stories that I haven't allowed you to tell?
I can't think of anything that
Oh, don't worry. There isn't.
No, I can't think of anything.
I've allowed you to speak. So I think we'll finish there. Thank you so much for talking to us and for all your work that you do, obviously, for Halsey.